हरि ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव हरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, page 36, chapter 85, canto 10. Lord Krishna retrieves Devaki's son. Vasudeva concluded, "Indeed, while still in the maternity room, you told us that you, the unborn Lord, had already been born several times as our son in previous ages. After manifesting each of these transcendental bodies to protect your own principles of religion, you then made them unmanifest, thus appearing and disappearing like a cloud. O supremely glorified, all-pervading Lord, who can understand the mystic, deluding potency of your opulent expansions?" Srila Jiva Goswami comments, "Thinking of me as your son is not imaginary, but real, since I was born to fulfill my promise to you." English is fabulous, isn't it? "In two previous births, I spoke to you." Okay. Hearing this, Vasudeva protests in this verse, "What did I say? Though without birth, you were born to us. Though this was only appearing like a birth, yuga after yuga." He shows the cause with kaimutya. Right? In other words, you're taking it here in the pastime that there's the philosophy of it, and then there's the relationship that they have. So Krishna is emphasizing on the relationship, and at this time, due to the glories of the Lord, then Vasudeva is going on the tattva. He says, yes, you may have taken your birth so many times to us, but actually you're unborn and all that. It's just your pastime, so you're the Supreme Lord, so you're not actually our son.
Yeah.
You understand? He's pushing that point. Well, Krishna's pushing the other point. No, I'm always taking birth as your son. Right?
So, Maharaj, can you say that the Vedas are always described by rasa? The Vedas are always connected with rasa, with tattva and rasa.
Yes, always tattva and rasa. They're always explaining that. And then what's the difference also between material and spiritual? Like that. Because that's the first stage that we see in the Bhagavatam in the first verse, is that to be able to tell, real intelligence, to be able to tell the difference between what is real and what's not. You know, in other words, revealing the truth. Truth means what's real and what's not real. So we'll take it on the material level in the reflection that truth means what's the physical facts and what's not. Mm-hmm. But we're taking it that the secondary is what's truth.
Yes.
Rather than it's the primary that's truth. Right? So something, the devotion to Krishna, that's truth. Then that truth has been expressed through a secondary form.
Yes.
So that secondary form in that way becomes truth.
Yes. Yes.
But otherwise it's not. Let's just say, like, you invite someone over to dinner, right? And, you know, a little bit of a formal occasion, right? You know, but it's, you know, in the house. So you get out your best, you know, utensils and everything like that, you know, and set it up on a bona fide way. Everything's in its right place. Everything is perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Now when they come to the door and you take their coat and everything and invite them in, and when it's time to eat, you take them to the table. Now, that perfect arrangement of all the plates and cups and cutlery and all these different things and napkins and all these things, what do they expect to see there?
Food.
Food. Now, what if they come and it's just this perfect arrangement of all the dishes and cutlery? I mean, like, impeccable. Like, you know, it's like, you know, You'd pass with honors from what do they call them? You know who serve? The waiter, a waiter's academy or something, you know, like that. You know what I'm saying? But if there's no food there, you understand? So the important thing is the food. And then, according to the nature of who you're dealing with, then the other things are there. So this is a formal occasion, so you have out your best stuff. If it's just the family or some, you know, close friends, then it'll be another thing. It'll be nice, clean, but, you know, it doesn't have to be that fancy. You don't have to worry if you drop it, then that's 100 euros or something. You know what I'm saying? Like that. Or more. Like that. Excuse me. You have the blue stuff, right? You know, yes. And so then, so that's you understand? But let's say, like, the essence is that. So depending upon who they are and all that, then that secondary form will be different, but the food is the primary aspect. So that is devotion to Krishna, that's the real thing. That's truth. So then, anything connected with that becomes truth. So now when they look at it, the food is nice, and the arrangements are nice, so the overall, oh, what a wonderful arrangement. But you comment on the arrangement. You don't say, wow, great looking food. You know? You say, oh, nice arrangement. You comment on the secondary. But it's actually only of value because of the primary. You understand? So in the material world, that's reflected. There is no primary. So then we'll just take the secondary aspects. And if they're the way that, you know, it's said it is or what it is, they'll say that's the truth. But it's not truth, because if it doesn't have a connection to Krishna, it's illusion. It has no value. You know, like that perfect setup with no food. You know what I'm saying? That's the whole thing. So when you have the primary, the second is automatic. Otherwise, how do we connect? But just because you have the secondary does not mean you have the primary. That's why we say, if you have Krishna, you have everything.
Speaking entire tattva, and Krishna, you know, Vasudev speaks of the tattva, that how he's God and everything. Whereas we find Krishna, you know, he says that I'm your son, so now the rasa part comes. Even we found in the case of gopis, that in they were speaking of rasa, but then Krishna speaks of tattva, that sarvam khalvidam dhamma. But then we find that these, in the conversation between devotees and Krishna, we have always the opposites taking place over here. So,
opposites, it depends upon the situation. It's only if that will, opposites taking means, if, you know, one's talking tattva, the other rasa, it's only if it will bring out more flavor. Mm-hmm. See, because Krishna is when he's talking to the gopis, it's because what is he going to talk about? Right? He's not there, so therefore then he's going to bring up these points of that he being everything, they can see him in everything. So they can always be absorbed. Does that make sense? Yeah. But if they're present, and they may be talking some things of devotion, then we see he talks dharma.
Yes.
But that's just the fun.
Yes.
I mean, who is he talking? When the cowherd boys say, hey, let's go play in the forest, does he say, no, why don't we, you know, go do our homework? Does he do that? No. So then, who is he doing that with? The gopis. What's the feminine nature? Contrary. Therefore, it's in line with mood with that. You understand? So he's just according to the nature of the devotee he's interacting. This means you take birth to protect us too. Or you take birth to maintain your nature of fulfilling the desires of your devotees. If that is so, then my birth as your son is real and full of mercy. Why then do you criticize yourself when you think of me as your son? Right? So he's saying either you come to protect us, right? Because he establishes religion, or he comes to fulfill the desires of the devotees. So then, if that's the case, then what's the problem with that? So then, why are you criticizing yourself for being, you know, being the son? You are not touched by faith. Fault. You are not touched by fault, like the sky. You accept various bodies, seeming to take birth from humans. Probably seeming to take birth from humans in a particular way, making an appearance that looks material. Then you give up those bodies by going to your eternal abode, the source of your appearance here. By your sweet appearance, we also appear like that. It is thus not proper to think of you as my son, since it is a temporary position. Right? Because he's looking at it from material time. I'm here, and then the relationship that's there is temporary. You perform your pastime, then you wind up the pastime, then it becomes a prakriti. Then like this, and so it keeps coming back and forth. Right? So therefore, it's not proper that he thinks of him as the son. But the point is there's always the apricot pastimes, right? That is always going on, and they're always there. But in the prakat, that has its seemingly manifest and unmanifest. Right? So, in other words, this is how devotees look at their position, because sometimes it's said, well, the pure devotees, they know everything. They know, why do they talk about themselves in the way they do? You know, in a humble way, and this and that. I'm not sure what's the purpose of doing that. It's like, do I really have to be humble? You know, I don't need to be humble. Why are they humble? You know, if they don't have to be humble, I don't have to be humble. If they have to be humble, I have to be humble. You know, yeah. So, the point is they're looking at it from that position of what's going on, the temporariness of what's there. You know, let's say, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, then, you know, when he was young, he went to school, he studied, he became a magistrate. So he'll look at the temporariness of material knowledge and temporariness of occupation, and that, you know, from that occupation he gets money, from that he maintains the family, the relationship with the family is temporary. And so then he'll look at it from that perspective and say, I'm a materialist. Yes. I become absorbed in all these, because he's doing those things. Mm-hmm. He'll only look at that side of it. Right? And then Krishna is looking at, no, but you're doing all those things, you know, in relationship to him and absorption in him and all these different things. So, does that make sense?
Yes.
So it's just the natural way of how to maintain the humility. Not, yeah, I'm so fabulous. You know. Okay. I was wondering when you're going to notice. You know. It took you a while, though. That's okay. It was, you know, it's quite obvious, but, everyone's an individual, so they all take, you know, you say that kind of, that's useless. So this is then what's happening. They're looking at it from that point of the temporariness, but they're leaving out their devotion. So if you leave out devotion, then whatever medium you use, it's temporary. Right? Because even if you're in the spiritual world, if you're not using the facilities there connected to Krishna, you're functioning in the material world. You're actually on the material platform. Does that make sense? Then Krishna says, I have said, you are eternal and will attain my supreme abode. Then why do you too act with such misery? Then Vasudeva says, O Lord, famous in the Vedic songs, who can know the Surup? I guess it's supposed to be Surup Shakti. Know the Surup Shakti in the form of the supreme abode, Vibhuti of you, full of unlimited power. Right? In other words, there's different kinds of dashes. What it means, like above, in the last sentence of the one above, it says all-pervading. So it's like it's two words that are combined as one.
Yeah.
Then they'll connect. But if you're using it as punctuation,
yeah,
not spelling,
yeah,
then you'll put a gap between.
Okay.
Yeah, because then you know that it's like a parenthesis. It's that kind of effect, that it's, It stands on its own, but it gives an importance for the actual sentence that's being said. Who can know the Sarup Shakti in the form of the supreme abode, Vibhuti, of you, full of unlimited powers? What is the cause of such thinking for us fallen souls? Or what is the use of such thinking? Right? In other words, we're fallen. Why should we think about this all highly elevated things? Because our position is actually here. So why we should think in these glorious positions there? We are here, we're sadhakas, we just try to do what we do. Then, you know, or then Krishna says, if you deride your thinking of me as your son, then why do you think like that? Right? You know, so he's saying is, well, you're deriding yourself as son. Why do you think like that? Because you're saying, oh, we can't be elevated and be your son, so why do you talk about here that I'm your son, but you're not actually the father like that? Why do you even bring it up? Because if I'm God and you're just a servant and there's nothing, why do you even bring up the topic? Right? Then Vasudeva, you told us that you appear as our son in various yugas. Right? So he said, you said it, so that's why I'm bringing it up. Right? Though it is impossible to have you as a son, I think that, like that, on the authority of your words, right? Krishna said it. Because Krishna said, no, but everything, you know, like you come to you, I'm your son. Yes, so then, according to that, then Krishna says, I said that only to indicate that I enter your body, not that I will become your son. You are overextending the statement of the Shruti, which says that I enter into all jivas individually and collectively. Tat shishva tad evanu pravishat. Having created the world, I enter into it. Taittiriya Upanishad. Where's the end of this? Oh, here it is. Like the sky, okay, then Vasudeva says, like the sky, you are unaffected. You enter into various bodies of the jiva as the Yantrayami, and then give up those bodies. Who respects that infant form of yours with little power? Who respects? Your entering is us is praised by the wise. The wise are my proof. Though it is impossible for me because of no qualification. Right? I respect it because the wise have said it. I don't know, right? Yeah. So that's the whole point, is that authority means that which coming from apta, those who are qualified. Right? So we take the great sages and all them, their authority. Right? Now if you see that based on authority, something's being practiced, and now the common person is also seeing that and saying that, then that just further confirms that, you know, the practicality of it. But it's not that the common person is the authority. That's always very important. So when it comes down to the Shastra says something to do, and then in the common people are doing things in a certain way, even though there be maybe many of them, we don't take that as authority. Oh no, but you can't do those things these days, just see, people don't accept and all that. Yeah, but all it takes is one celebrity to come on and change the mood, and suddenly everybody's changed in one day. You know, I don't know how it is now, but I remember before I was told that, like in Bombay, then the girls would go to the, when you had to go to the cinema to watch the movie, right? So they go to the Bollywood movie. And when the movie was finished, whatever, because it's a new movie, so then whatever the heroine is wearing, that's the latest fashion, because that's where fashion comes from. You have to follow authority, right? So when they leave the theater, they wouldn't go straight home. They'd go to the market and to the tailors, make their order, and then go home. You understand? And so like that, in one movie, the fashion has changed. So this whole, no, you can't do it this way, all it takes is great. Well, so we'd rather follow these great personalities rather than these other guys. That's all. It's just a matter of who you want to follow. That's all. You know, you means you want to cross the ocean holding onto a dog's tail, go for it. We don't care. But if you actually want to get across, there's a boat, you know, and it has favorable breezes, there's a rudder, there's a captain, there's, you know, there's all these things. Take the boat. It means you want to be out there with the dog? We'll wave as we go by. You know? Okay. So Devaki's request. Verses 21 to 33. Sugriva Goswami said, having heard his father's words, The Supreme Lord, leader of the Sattvatas, replied in a gentle voice as he bowed his head in humility and smiled. Srila Jiva Goswami explains, at the revelation of his greatness, Krishna shrunk with modesty. He was the best of the Sattvatas, appearing with birth pastimes in that family with his form. Because Vasudeva was his father, Krishna acted in this way. He then revealed a smile, since such words were not proper. By his attractive smile, he indicated he did not give regard to his father's words, glorifying his powers. The meaning is this: I accept him as my father, which is beyond Brahma's desires. Knowledge of my powers that ordinary sages realize is not proper for him and creates restrictive feelings in me. For that purpose, after I killed Kamsa, I increased their prema as parents. Ah, by the words of the sages, again that respectful aspect from knowing my greatness has appeared in my parents. Right? Because when he killed Kamsa, that happened. So then he had to again with his Yogamaya cover. Now again, with the words of the, you know, as Krishna says, ordinary sages, meaning they're amongst sages are always greater than the common person. But amongst sages, those who are, you know, have that attitude of pure devotion, then that and see Krishna in the relationship with the devotee, that's special. And just being, having knowledge of him as supreme and detachment from the material world, that's ordinary. So even if Narad Muni is discussing on that level, that is ordinary stuff. It means the standard for sages. That's how they're going to see they're going to live. But the sages aren't his parents. Therefore, it doesn't apply to his parents. Even though they may be very elevated, and in their own context, they may be great devotees, and it's perfect for their prema. But it's wrong for Vasudeva's prema. Right? Therefore, that little bit of a smile is that, you know, that he said all these great things, so he's showing that humility and modesty, which is appropriate. But at the same time, there's a smile, because if you're being modest, you don't smile. Right? And if you do, then you know, okay, watch out. Who's, you know, is this person a ninja? What, you know, what's going on here? What's going to happen next? You know. Like that. So, the point is, he's smiling because it doesn't apply to him. It doesn't apply to this relationship. Means that he's God, that all applies, but that doesn't apply to this relationship that he has with Vasudeva. Right? Okay. Because it creates restrictive feelings. He can't just have that feeling, that parental rasa, because now they're acting in dasya. You know? So it restricts the feelings, so it's not proper. The Supreme Lord, so that's what the smile was, right? The Supreme Lord said, my dear father, I consider your statements appropriate, since you have explained the various categories of existence by referring to us, your sons. Not only I, but also you, along with my respected brother, and these residents of Dwarka, should all be considered in this same philosophical light. Oh, best of the Yadus, indeed, we should include all that exists, both moving and non-moving. So, when he says all these statements, they're correct, you know. But it's correct if they see it in relationship to not only Krishna and his transcendental position, but also all the residents of Dwarka, all that, and all things that is, everything's there, because being connected to Krishna, then it all has that eternal position. So then in that case, it doesn't affect their relationship. Like you see, the Brajbasis, they can maintain that everything's connected to Krishna, everything comes from Krishna, but they're still only interested in Krishna. Because everything's coming from Krishna. Does that make sense? So it doesn't distract them, but in Dwarkavasis then it tends to distract. So he's pointing out there's no need for it to distract. So it'll bring it back to the position, they'll function at that, and if it comes up again, it might distract them again. It doesn't distract them from devotion to the Lord, it distracts them from which rasa they're functioning and expressing that devotion. Right? Does that make sense? That's good. The BBT purport states, to protect his parents' intimate relation with him, Lord Krishna stresses the oneness of all existence in his statement to his father. Vasudeva had been reminded of his son's greatness by hearing the sages gathered at Kurukshetra. Because his sense of awe was ruining his intimate parental relationship with Krishna, and therefore Krishna wanted to dispel it. We should not misunderstand the oneness Lord Krishna speaks of here. The subtle words of the Upanishads often mislead impersonalists into believing that all existence is ineffably one, without any variety in the ultimate sense. Some Upanishadic mantras emphasize the sameness of God and His creation, while others speak about their difference, right? Because both are there. So it's not that as you can look at it this way or that, both are true. So it's actually the oneness and simultaneous, inconceivable simultaneous oneness and difference. Tattvam asi svetaketo. You are that, O svetaketo. For example, is an abheda vakya, a mantra affirming that all things are one with God, being his dependent expansions. But the Upanishads also contain many Veda Vakyas. Okay, Abheda Vakya and Veda Vakya. Statements that affirm the unique distinguishing qualities of the Supreme, such as this statement. Ka evanyat ka pranyad yadyesha akasha anando nasyat esha evanandayati. Who would there be to activate the creation and give life to all beings if this infinite supreme were not the original enjoyer? Indeed, he alone is the source of all pleasure. Taittiriya Upanishad 2.7.1. By the influence of the Supreme Lord's bewildering Maya, envious impersonalists read the Abheda Vakyas literally and accept the Veda Vakyas only in a figurative way. Right? So, in other words, you have the Abheda and the Lakshana meanings of things. Abheda means the direct, Lakshana means the poetic. Right? So, instead of taking them both from the Abheda, that this is actually the actual thing, and this is how you act on, so Abhideya. They only take one side like that, because when you can apply a statement literally, you would. But if you can't apply it literally, that then you know it is figurative, or it's poetic. You know, the example given of the cowherd, the cowherd village on the Ganga. So it can't be applied literally because they can't be, the village is not floating on the Ganga. So then it means it's figuratively, it means it's next to the Ganga, but that means it's right there, so the Ganga is accessible, so you call it on the Ganga. Does that make sense? But since both of these can be applied directly, literally, you would accept both. The problem is you say that's a contradiction. That's the inconceivable simultaneous oneness and difference. So without a Chinta Beta Beta Tattva, you can't completely remove all the doubts that are there. You can, with the others, you can remove enough doubts depending upon the piety of the person and all that. But the point is a Chinta Beta Beta, that can remove all doubts. Authoritative Vaishnava commentators, on the other hand, carefully reconcile the apparent contradictions in accordance with the interpretive principles of Vedic Mimamsa and logically established conclusions of the Vedanta. Right, so then they show how it actually functions in this particular way. Srila Sanatana Goswami explains, satisfying Vasudeva with his greetings, he then speaks with humility since he is the ocean of good qualities. Yuyam, you, in the plural, indicates respect or includes Devaki and others. Right, so at least him, Vasudeva and Devaki, or I can include Vasudeva, Devaki, and all the Yadus. Right, because when he says he's the son of them, that means then he has other relations with everyone else. You know, then Ugrasena is his grandfather, and then others are uncles and cousins and nephews, and you understand? You know, and husbands, all these things, all these different things are there. Asau indicates that Balaram is the Supreme Lord. So when he says himself, and he says Asau, so he uses the plural, that means when Balaram's included in this definition of the Supreme Lord. All these known as friends or as jivas should be considered in the same way. Right? So if you consider them all that way, you'll always see in the transcendental. Then you'll be transcendentally situated and be able to maintain the relationship. Right? Otherwise, he's switching into not seeing it applied to everyone. So therefore, then it breaks the relationship. Oh, best of the Yadus, such vision with respect to the lower entities is appropriate for the greatest person. Right? Because the greater they are, the more they can see connected to Krishna. Right? In the beginning, we just see, okay, just chanting or prasad or the temple or, you know, the temple devotees or, you know, some, there are certain things connected to Krishna. But with time, you can see everything connected to Krishna. But seeing it all, but then you can say, oh, then you can do anything, right? But then the point is Rupa Goswami says, no, is you have to be conscious of Krishna. So, okay, it's all connected to Krishna, but are you conscious of that? If you're conscious that it's connected to Krishna, okay, that's the first, directive. How you identify. You know, what's there. So you're conscious. So it's not that it's just, oh yeah, it's all good, but are you conscious of that? So if you're conscious of that, great. Now this next stage is that being conscious of all that, then you have to be conscious of, okay, within all that, what is favorable to Krishna? Because all that's not favorable to Krishna. It's Krishna, but that's why Krishna says he's all that, but he's beyond that. He's separate from that. Because within all that, only a part of it is favorable to Krishna. Means, in other words, what Krishna likes. Right? So now, we've now brought it to the next stage of, position, or next identity. Mm-hmm. Is that, okay, it's all Krishna, I'm conscious of that, and I'm conscious of what is favorable to Krishna. Right? Now, then, the next stage is that it's free from karma and jnana. Yes. Because I could be doing this favorable to Krishna because I want the benefit. Right? I want some material benefit. I go to someone who's in authority and I try to please them. So I will do those things that are favorable to them to get the result that I get what I want materially. Right? So therefore it's free from karma and jnana, means it doesn't have any material tinge. Therefore it's favorable to Krishna just to please Krishna. That is called pure devotion. Therefore Rupa Goswami has already given the understanding to balance so that people go, oh, it's all Krishna, so I can do whatever I like. No, but that you can, but it's not devotion. Don't try to make two things that are different the same. Right? It's only devotion. When you use it's all Krishna, you have to be conscious of that. Otherwise, don't use that. Right? We're using it because the acharyas say. We may not be, but we know that they say. Therefore, then, favorable means what's recommended. So therefore, hearing that it's all about Krishna, we accept what's favorable as given by the acharyas and do that the best we can without desire for karma and jnana. Mm-hmm. Then that is following the footsteps of pure devotion. Yeah? Yeah, that's the iti in Anyabhilasita. Mm-hmm. Anyabhilasita. You know, it means pure devotion and that Ita, and that following that pure devotion. Right? And then those with realization, they do see everything connected to Krishna, and they only look for those things that are favorable to Krishna, and then they try to apply those to please Krishna. Right? So again, it doesn't change our position of what we do. You can expand your understanding of it, so you can expand how you're dealing with everything. But it doesn't change what we do. It's not that by knowing this, now it changes. Oh, we don't have to do all those Hare Krishna stuff. No, it still remains the same. Because otherwise, unless we're Apta, then how do we know? Right? And we see that the Aptas don't say that they're Aptas. They give reference to others. Like Vasudev here is not saying, I didn't say this, you said this. You know, referring to Krishna. You know, and then referring to what Narad Muni and the other sages are saying. Right? Even though he is Krishna's father. So, you know, you're not talking about a small timer. Okay? Srila Jiva Goswami points out that the following two verses explain how to perceive the Lord. The Lord continued, "The Supreme Spirit, Paramatma, is indeed one. He is self-luminous and eternal, transcendental and devoid of material qualities. But through the agency of the very modes he has created, the one supreme truth manifests as many among the expansions of those modes. Right. In other words, he takes on the form, all the bodies, all the different things, and all those different things. Because, but it's according to, he's not controlled by the modes, they act by the modes. Does that make sense? It's just like, let us say, you create a game and all the rules, and then you play the game. But you're not technically controlled by the rules. You're just following the science of that. So he's created the material world. It has its science, how it works. And then he expands into all that. But it doesn't mean because he's expanded, he's controlled by it. We're controlled by it. Right? Does that make sense? He takes on all the forms of all the bodies and all that because that he makes that available for the jivas. We're in those positions not necessarily because we want to. Right? You understand? Right? We're in this particular body. It's not necessarily that we're just thinking this is the best thing that's ever happened to us. Right? It's a good thing, especially nowadays. People are, whatever it is you have, you want something else. You know? But does that make sense? So, we're not, so we're controlled by it. We had to. But Krishna has taken all these forms to make it available for the jivas in their sojourn in the material world. So he's not controlled by it. You know what I'm saying? Just like the prison makes cells available for the inmates. But they're not controlled by those cells. They govern them, but they're not controlled by them. Does that make sense? So in this way, he becomes everything. And so you can always remember the person from everything that you're dealing with. The elements of ether, air, fire, water, and earth become visible, invisible, minute, or extensive as they manifest in various objects. Similarly, the Paramatma, though one, appears to become many. Right? So earth is the same thing, but you put more atoms together in one form, it takes on, you know, something like water. Water is still water, whether you have one atom or you have so many that it makes an ocean. But the point is, this water doesn't change. So it's not controlled. It's not, now water is controlled by the ocean. No, it's still water. It just manifests as the ocean. Or it may just be a drop of water. That makes sense? You know, you're so thirsty you want an ocean, but you only get a drop of water. You know, like that, so. We're controlled. Yeah, and Paramatma appears and disappears in various manifestations because it's just one Paramatma. But as living entities expand into these forms that he's expanding, then he goes along with them. But it's still one person goes along with them. It's not that there's different Paramatmas. Yeah, my Paramatma. Are they Paramatmas? Hey, what's the... How's it going on over there? I don't know. This guy, you know, I wish he'd take a bow. You know? Yeah. Mine used to be like that, but then... No, you don't have that. There's one person. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book. Can we read that?
The Bibi Tikkapur states...
Oh, up there. Okay, because it ended with the same thing. Okay. BBT purport states, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti explains this and the previous verse as follows. The one Paramatma appears to be many by the influence of the modes of nature that he himself creates. How is that? Because although in truth the Paramatma is self-illuminating, eternal, aloof from everything and free from the modes of nature, when he appears as he manifests, he seems to be the opposite. A multiplicity of temporary objects saturated with the modes of nature, just as the elements of ether and so on. When manifesting in pots and other things, seem to appear and disappear. So the Paramatma seems to appear and disappear in his various manifestations. Yeah, so ether appears, like you have a pot. And now you can look in the pot and see there's space inside. So it appears as if space has appeared. The space has always been there. Yeah. So it's always there. Because there's that eternal principle, the nature of space. Okay? Yeah, don't get into the Maya body, break the pot. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna Bhakti, Vasudeva was in the complete perfection of life in considering Lord Krishna and Balaram to be his sons. But because the sages assembled in the place of pilgrimage at Kurukshetra had spoken about the Lord as the supreme cause of everything, Vasudeva simply repeated it out of his love for Krishna and Balaram. Lord Krishna did not wish to detract from his relationship with Vasudeva's father and son. Therefore, in the very beginning of his reply, he accepted the fact that he is the eternal son of Vasudeva, and that Vasudeva is the eternal father of Krishna. After this, Lord Krishna informed his father of the spiritual identity of all living entities. He continued, "My father, my dear father, everyone and everything, including me and my lord, my brother Balaram, as well as all the inhabitants of the city of Dwarka, and the whole cosmic manifestation are exactly as you have already explained. But all of us are also qualitatively one." Right? Because they're coming from. So because his father's stating it, he doesn't also want to just, you know, say, no, that's stupid. So he's respecting, right? You can see as he's being humble, you know, and all these different things. But at the same time, he wants to put it into the context of their relationship. Mm-hmm. And out of his affection for his sons, that they're so great in that, that's why he's now seeing them as God. So it's actually basis for going into that is based on his affection for Krishna Balaram as his sons. Right? So it's not, it's a different rasa. It's just because of seeing like that, it then restricts the relationship. Because in parental rasa, you also have servitorship. But you also have friendship, you have parental. Right? So, in appreciating the greatness of the Lord, and this, rather than just him being the greatness of his one, being a wonderful son, but as God, then it's switched where now he's only manifesting the servant aspect. But that love for Krishna and Balaram still remains. Does that make sense? But it's restricted in that its expression is only now through dasya and not through friendship and parental. Does that make sense? So that's why then Krishna wants to bring it back. But because its purpose or its origin was love for Krishna, he's not going to oppose it. He's just going to redirect it. Does that make sense? Yeah. And you make it a qualitative one, it brings out that aspect of relationship, that they're all together and they all have that, you know, all that connection. So it's for bringing out the point of relationship, not about his godness. Mm-hmm. So the point can be used, you know, do both things. Lord Krishna intended for Vasudeva to see everything with the vision of a Mahabhagavat, a first-class devotee, who sees that all living entities are part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, and that the Supreme Lord is situated in everyone's heart. Right? Because you have your relationship, and all others are part and parcel, and if nothing else, then the Lord is in their heart, so you see that relationship. So you're going to deal with them all in a very proper way. Does that make sense? So it's not that by adding this, it's going to affect his relationship with him. It's just that he's bringing in all these points of how everything is functioning as God, as separate from being his son. So he's showing that he can be the son, he can be God, and all these things can still remain. Does that make sense? So the point is the rasa relationship. It's not about the tattva. It's about the relationship. Right? So that's the whole point. Why the Sahajya mentality is so unimportant. Because they take it that the tattva is not important and it gets a problem with rasa. But the point is if you're actually situated in it and see it properly, it only enhances. So therefore, that's why we don't take any heed in that. Or taking it the opposite way, just as all the oneness and all that, the Mayavad thing, that also is useless. Right? So if it's one or the other, then it's a problem. Right? Because if you take it as it's only two and no other aspect, then where does relationship come in? Because there has to be commonality. But to keep people who think they're God from thinking that they're God, then you just say it's two, it breaks that mood. We have to remember, Madhvacharya is preaching to those who didn't respond to Ramanujacharya's preaching. So that means these are the real, adamant individuals are just so attached to their impersonal concept that he has to use a stronger application. They're saying one, you say two. Right? Does that make sense? And if someone comes with one baseball bat and you have two, who wins? Right? So that's the whole point. So that's the idea, is that it's that has that. The point is the two can function together. Does that make sense? But the point of them functioning together is for the relationship. The technical is only in support of the relationship. Yes? No?
Maharaj, is it that one should not overemphasize on either tattva or either rasa? You know, but they should be.
One should not overemphasize, yes.
Yeah, but there should be a perfect balance between them, then it works, then it is functional.
Yes. Yeah? So now you think about it. Lord Krishna then gave a nice example in terms of the five elements. Oh no, we're still farther up. Okay, Lord Krishna intended for Vasudeva to see everything with the vision of a Mahat Bhagavat, a first-class devotee, who sees that all living entities are part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, and that the Supreme Lord is situated in everyone's heart. In fact, every living entity has a spiritual identity, but in contact with the material existence, it becomes influenced by the material modes of nature. Right? So everyone has a natural relationship with the Lord, right? An inherent relationship. But that becomes covered because of our simply dealing with the secondary. Because if you only deal with secondary, it's going to lose the taste. So that's why you have to keep changing. Right? Why does this living entity go through samsara? Because whatever he's doing at some point gives less taste. So then you have to try to increase that. And by increasing that, then at some point the incremental increasing has to go beyond what you're actually supposed to be doing. Does that make sense? No. So then you're going to get into problems. And then that will start the process going down. Because you're trying to get more and more and all that, and so then the suffering is going to be. Does that make sense? Yeah. So, yeah. And so then, therefore, the bodies have to keep changing. The situations change because you get tired of that one situation because you're only looking at the secondary. Right? So, the point is that secondary can only give a specific experience. There may be facets of that experience, so depending exactly how you put it together, there might be some little bit of variety. You know, you go down the slope and it's dry powder or it's wet powder or it's, whatever it is, there'll be a slight difference in experience. But when you hit the tree, it will be the same experience. You know what I'm saying? So, the whole point is that the principle is there, is that it has its nature. And these secondary things have their nature. They function according to that. We deal with them and try to squeeze what we can from it, but what we're squeezing is not going to be much. You know, a little variety here and there and adjust it a little bit. You know, so you get tired of skiing over here, then let's go to a different mountain. But, you know what I'm saying? The trees are, smaller or bigger. You hit a rock instead of a tree, so much better, right? Like that. This place has no avalanches, it's not exciting. This one does, it's more exciting. Does that make sense? Here you just start and you just push and you go. You attain the same speed, you're going to think. This one you drop out of a helicopter and then go the same. It's this once you hit the ground, there's no difference. You know what I'm saying? It's like if I pick up the food with a plastic spoon or I pick it up with a silver spoon. Once it gets in the mouth on the tongue, it's the same experience. But because we put so much on the secondary, then you understand? So then what happens is that because that element, the secondary, can give so limited experience, then we have to change to something else. We do the little bit of variety, and when that doesn't work, then we have to make a major change. Generally, by feminine nature, it has to be the opposite. We're totally into sports, and we stop sports. We sit down and read books, or something like that. So it has to be like that, and then from there it goes around, and it just keeps going. And therefore, then all those situations, right? But when the secondary is being applied to please the primary being unlimited, the experience is unlimited, therefore you can unlimitedly use these secondary things in your field and not have a problem. You understand? That's why then, as parent of Krishna, they can do that eternally. Because they're connected to Krishna, who's eternal and unlimited, therefore the experience is newer and newer every moment. Does that make sense? While in the mundane, no matter how nicely you do the mechanical, you cannot get any satisfaction. Does that make sense? Yes. Okay.
Rupa Goswami says in NOD that Ananda, then Brahmananda is just compared to a fraction of
a portion of a drop
in an ocean of devotion.
Yes. So that's the, yes. Okay. So now he's pointing out that actually, so we understand the difference rather than just, one goes on eternally and one doesn't. But we might take it that, okay, I'm happy here, but I'm unhappy because of the temporariness. While in the spiritual world, I'll be happy because it doesn't. So he's pointing out, Rupa Goswami then is giving that, the point that whatever happiness you can gain here, right, it's also explained in the Upanishad, Taittiriya Upanishad, in the same section. That section, the second part is called the Anandabhava. So what was quoted, and so it says that if you take the happiness of being the emperor of the world
without any problem,
without any rival, like Yudhishthira. Mm-hmm. We'll just because we're dealing with such big amounts, we'll count that as one unit of happiness. Mm-hmm. Not that we can't divide that down. That my eating the sandwich. So do you like the sandwich? Yeah, I would say that was like a 1/10 billionth of a part of that. It was pretty good. Yeah. So that's counted as one unit of happiness. Right? Then when you go up above that, I'm not sure who's above it, but basically we'll go through the basic principles of it. You have the Gandharvas. It'll be 100 times that, their happiness. Right? Then you have the Brahma Gandharvas, the ones that sing in his court. That's 100 times that. Then you're going to have the general demigods. Then that's going to be 100 times that. Then you're going to have the ones that have a position and authority. They have 100 times that. Then Indra is 100 times that. Vajrapati is 100 times that. Brahma 100 times that. And Brahma's happiness is compared to a drop, compared to the ocean of happiness of Brahman, of liberation. Right? And that happiness of Brahman is considered to be a fraction of a portion of a drop compared to the unlimited ocean of bhakti. So you see, not only is it eternal, but it's a lot better. Okay? Thank you. Yeah, we're good.
So the same applies for Vaikuntha Dwarka and
Vaikuntha Dwarka and all that? No, it's prema. It's just a matter of what is the levels. It's a matter of how far something goes, because prema has the 10 aspects like that. So prema is their bhava. They've gone beyond that to prema. But generally, those on the platform of Nishanta, that can be just that level of bhava. So it's transcendental. But it hasn't turned into that love where there is that sense of possession. Right? So you can have those on that level. But the point is once there's that sense of possession, you have that aspect of prema, then from there, then it has more levels that can go through. Mm-hmm. I don't remember if it's 10 or it's 8, whatever
it's
it is.
Eight.
Eight. So it gets up to then from there. Depending upon the particular rasa, it goes higher on that until you get to the conjugal, which you'll have that mahabha. Mm-hmm. Right? Does that make sense? And then within that, then Radharani's group would be higher in that, and then what Radharani tastes is the highest form. Does that make sense? So it's not specifically as much the realm as what's the relationship within that. You know, the realms in general may have a certain amount they go, but that's not, I wouldn't apply that here. Mm-hmm. Why use that here? Because you're trying to show the superiority of the spiritual taste over that of liberation in the material world. So why throw Vaikuntha there? Because it's spiritual world. So you wouldn't use it there. Even though intellectually you could, but it'll only be giving an intellectual taste. It won't be giving an actual understanding, true understanding. In fact, every living has a spiritual identity. Okay. He becomes covered by the concept of the bodily life, forgetting that his spirit soul is of the same quality as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One mistakenly considers one individual be different from another simply because of their material bodily coverings. Because of differences between bodies, the spirit soul appears before us differently. So we're making the distinction based on the body. So that means the Mahabhagavats, as Krishna wants Vasudeva to be looking, then you don't make the distinction based on the body. You make it, it's the souls are all there. So now it'll be according to how much the soul is surrendering to the Lord or not. But the point is they all start off on that transcendental position. They may not be functioning that because they're identifying with the body. Does that make sense? So that kind of thing, that's why then we're seeing the differences of super soul or these different things. These are actually material. They're coming from the world of passion. Right? Because passion is for sense gratification. Sense gratification means you see the difference so you can enjoy. Right? Ignorance means you can't see the difference so you can't enjoy. In fact, generally you'll get a bad result because you can't tell the difference. Right? And goodness means you have that knowledge, so then you can see that regulated and that like that. It'll have that kind of happiness. So, yeah. Lord Krishna then gave a nice example in terms of the five material elements. The total material elements, namely the sky, air, fire, water, and earth, are present in everything in the material world, whether in an earthen pot or in a mountain or in the trees or in an earring. These five elements are present in everything, in different proportions and quantities. So it's just a matter of the proportion, but everything's made out of these five. Right? A mountain is a gigantic form of the combination of these five elements, and a small earthen pot is made of the same elements, but in a smaller quantity. Therefore, all material items, although in different shapes or different quantities, are of the same ingredients. Similarly, the living entities, beginning from Lord Krishna and including millions of Vishnu forms, and also the living entities in different forms, from Lord Brahma down to the small ant, are all of the same spiritual quality. There are some are great in quantity and some are small, but qualitatively are of the same nature. It is therefore confirmed in the Upanishads that Krishna, or the Supreme Lord, is the chief amongst all living entities. And he maintains them and supplies them with all necessities of life because he's the greatness. He supplies all the things. Right? Where do you get the earth for making the pot? From the mountain. Right? You don't get it from another pot. Right? I don't have a pot, break that pot, grind it up into that, soak it overnight in that, and then make a new pot and, no. Anyone who knows this philosophy is in perfect knowledge. So, the qualities that are the same, that's how they interact. Then, because of the greatness of it, therefore Krishna is omniscient, omnipotent, he's the creator, he's these are beyond these qualities of relationships. So the first 50 qualities, those are what are used in relationships. Qualities beyond that are the greatness of great personalities. You understand? And then when you have the greatness that's there, that's the 60 qualities of Vishnu. Right? 55 will include Brahma and Shiva. Then when you go to 60, that's just Vishnu. But then, within that, that's majesty. Now when you add in the element of sweetness, because that's actually the superior of the two, then you have four more qualities. But, you see, it's all in interaction with Krishna. I mean, with the devotees. Yeah? You know, his beauty, his interaction with the devotees, always surrounded by devotees, his flute, his wonderful, amazing pastimes, because they're all based on this sweetness. So, but we see the 50 qualities are common. That's all that's necessary for the jiva and the Lord. We don't require the other qualities, the other 14 qualities, to interact with Krishna. He has those because he's God. But the natural qualities to interact in relationship and rasa, those 50, that's what's required. And that the jiva has. Now it's just a matter of purifying and then engaging. Right? So that's why we purify, because we're probably not using all 50. Or if we have them, we're not using them connected to Krishna. So we purify the senses, then they're used for Krishna. Then you see all good qualities naturally come. Because when you purify the soul in relation to Krishna, they naturally manifest all these 50 qualities. Does that make sense? Yes?
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai, go with the family.